You think of large language models like ChatGPT. What you don't want to do is think about them as tools that can like generate blog articles, because you're going to be disappointed, because an article that is an average of what's already on the web is exactly an article that Google does not need.
Hearing you talk about intent completely changed how I thought about all of it.
And the visual design of your website, the user experience that you're crafting matters a lot for engagement. So we have to make sure that we're putting all of these things together.
I'm Rachel Coble. And I'm Liz Dean. Welcome to Mock It. This podcast interviews industry experts, from AI innovators to UX architects to nonprofit leaders and lots of people in between.
We explore the back of the napkin ideas that impact the nation, so you don't have to dig for the discoveries yourself. Enjoy, and don't forget to like and subscribe. So for today's podcast, we're going to be talking to Dale Bertrand, who founded Fire and Spark 15 years ago. He's done different SEO projects for Nestle and led several different projects abroad as well as nationally. Additionally, he is a well-known speaker in the different marketing circuits.
Yeah, that is how we originally found him. The marketing team at MetroStar went to Inbound, which is HubSpot's marketing conference that happens in Boston. So he's from Boston. So we have a lot of Boston people on this season, but he's amazing. He gives really great antidotes for why AI is important, how to use SEO properly in this day and age, which for my job is really important. So it was really interesting to learn a little bit more about him and his work.
Yeah, it was great. So we hope you enjoy.
And we'll make an appointment so you can come back with your fiance, taste all the cakes. And I said, whoa, slow down. Not the way we're doing this. You know, my wife entrusted me with this task. And this is one of the ways that I'm going to prove that I'm marriage material. By getting this done without any stress or involvement from my fiance. So they looked at me and they're like, yeah, that's a little weird, but sure, we can make that happen. Why don't you come in the back and we'll take a look at all the different options and try some cake and all that. And I said, no, wait, I still don't think you understand. Like, I don't want to spend any time on this. I've seen pictures of wedding cakes, and I've seen that you guys have books of wedding cakes near the register. So just bring me the best wedding cake book that you have with the most awesome cakes in it and give me the cake on the cover. So that's the, and this is a true story. That's the way I ordered our wedding cake. You would think that, that would work out. She said, fine, I'll do it. You're the only person that's ever asked for that, but sure. That's how I ordered the wedding cake. The problem was, on the day of our wedding, and this is also true. Like, I was like, yeah, when we were at our reception, there were a bunch of, family, friends, everybody's kind of milling around. We're having a good time. And somebody from the facility came up to me and said, Dale, we've got a few different cakes in the back that were delivered. We don't know which one is yours because they don't have names on them.
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, what? And she said, don't worry, we're going to have you and a couple other grooms come into the kitchen. Uh-oh. We're going to do a cake lineup, and you can pick out your cake just to make sure that you guys get the right one. And I was like, holy crap, I can't believe this bit me in the butt. Like, I have no idea what my cake looks like. So we went in the back, once again, true story, to do the wedding cake lineup. And fortunately for me, the other two grooms did know what their cake was. So we just got a third one, right? Which was beautiful, beautiful cake. So that is how we ended up. And then the moral of this story changes depending on what talk I'm doing. But I believe for the talk that you saw, the moral of the story was, sometimes details matter, sometimes they don't. Now let's get on to like the details that matter for SEO.
Yes. Oh, thank you for retelling it. It was so good. It was like one of the only things I remember from Inbound, because Inbound is so crazy and there's so much going on. And the running joke at Inbound was that it was overbooked. Like, there was just so much to see and do. But I remember the cake story.
Story again. I really appreciate you prompting me to kind of to work on it and include it in my 2024 talks.
Yeah, you should. It's so funny. And I was a fiance at the time too. I'm now married after Inbound. But so I think that's why I found it even funnier, because I could totally see my now husband doing exactly that.
Oh, that is awesome.
We did a cake made out of cheese was our like cake or whatever. So I didn't know what it was like looked like either. It just showed up and it was a cake that was made of cheese. So
that is so cool.
Yeah, we had like normal dessert for like that the venue did of like it was like chocolate mousse, but like for the cake cutting, that was like, so we had our little like cake cutting photo op.
Oh, nice. Did either of you write your own vows? I have a point to this that ties back to this conversation of what you do in your life. I have been seeing this big trend online that a lot of people have been using ChatGPT to write their vows.
Oh, geez.
No.
And so then they all sound exactly the same. And there's this one video that like the man went and then the woman went and they were almost verbatim the same words. And you could tell they both used ChatGPT to write their vows. Oh. And I'm like, that might be a red flag for the marriage.
Yeah.
But, oh, wow.
Right. But so like, what would you recommend people use? Normal, like people outside of like who aren't in the AI world, like all the time that know how to prompt. Ooh. And I know that prompting is changing, almost every day, but what would you recommend people use it for?
If you were writing marriage vows and you wanted to use some AI tools to help you get there, it would be really important that you supply some of your own thinking or experience or something unique about your relationship to the AI tool so it can inject that into what it's writing. So you don't really want to ask it to write the wedding vows. You want it to basically rewrite what you give it in the form of wedding vows.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Which is different. Right? So you could imagine, like the way I would do it is I would have somebody prompt me, you know, ask me about the relationship, ask me about the future, ask me why I proposed in the first place, and then feed all of that to ChatGPT and just say, put this in the form of a wedding vow.
I saw that you're originally an engineer and you studied a lot of AI stuff. And so we at MetroStar work with a lot of government like agencies and things like that. So one of the things you mentioned in your talk at Inbound is that you built like a high performance or super smart computer for the National Security Agency. Can you tell me how you went from doing that to getting into SEO?
Yeah. Just a little bit more color about that particular project. It was a startup that I was recruited at. I studied engineering undergrad, so computer engineering. So I was trained to like build computers. So I was recruited to a startup that was building a large machine for the government, which was awesome. One thing about the machine was it was like low power, high performance, and these were all like very unique characteristics back then. So for me, working on that machine for 3 years, and then realizing that I was probably at the peak of my engineering career after I designed and built a $6 million supercomputer for the government, I couldn't imagine. I didn't want to go back to building like digital cameras or something like that. And I was burned out. Like it was not the best project. I don't know how to say this.
But, not sustainable.
The way I was working was not sustainable. Yeah. Yes, that's the right way to say it. So I was completely burnt out. I mean, after that, and this answers your question about how I got into marketing. So I was just in this technical project for 3 years, working overtime, nights, weekends, just trying to get this thing out the door for a startup that I was working for that was selling the machine to the federal government. And we built it, we shipped it, that was awesome, but I was totally burnt out. So I quit like 3 years into that and just, I had no idea what I was gonna do next. I mean, my boss at the time was upset because he thought I was going across the street to one of their competitors. But I told him, I said, no, I'm just really quitting the profession. And that was even worse for him because it was like, obviously it was tough on his identity that I decided I didn't want the identity of a computer engineer anymore. So I had no idea what I was going to do. And I remember that I was sitting out on the Rose Kennedy Greenway here in Boston where I live. And I wanted to start a business and I wanted that business to be very different from computer engineering or what I had done in the past in electronics. So at the time, I thought that a very different type of business would be a media company. So I named my business Greenway Media because that's how I wanted it to just be something different, but I had no idea what it was going to do. And then, so I started doing things, like doing some consulting around digital marketing and analytics. I did some consulting on like the technical side of digital marketing because that's what my background was. And then I also built some websites. So I was a publisher at the time, writing about a number of different things like baby products because my wife was pregnant at the time with our first son. And then also there were some other sites that I built related to like nursing and forensic science or some random stuff, but I was a publisher back then. And that's what got me into the consulting around digital marketing and eventually just focused all of my energy on SEO because that's what I got good at and built a team around that. But it really started with just being burned out from my technical career.
How did you know to get into that sort of field of digital marketing and stuff like that? Because like this is several years ago. So that was like before it was cool or before it was, you know, if we say digital marketing, people know what that means now. But this is like 15 years ago or 15 years plus. So how did you know?
Around the time frame of like 2005, 2006, I was working as a programmer and a computer engineer, but I was still, and I had heard about digital marketing and various aspects of it, like analytics and building websites and optimizing for conversion. And I thought all of that was interesting. So I had been reading about that and building my own websites basically in my spare time. So that's how I got into it. And then when I decided I was burnt out from the engineering career, it was obvious to me that I was going to do something related to digital marketing because I had started, you know, a few years prior.
Oh, that is so cool. When you started Fire and Spark after, you know, diving back into this world of marketing, how did you and your team or just you come up with kind of focusing on SEO for a revenue approach? Can you elaborate on how that approach is different than what we see other people doing?
Yeah, well, it really took years to get there because old school SEO is about doing keyword research, trying to rank for keywords, trying to get as much organic traffic as you can. And what we found and clients that come to us for help have found is that it's possible that you achieve your rankings and your traffic, but it still doesn't move the needle on your business. So the business impact isn't there if it doesn't lead to sales or the conversions that you're looking for. Like if you're looking for people coming to your website to book a demo or talk to one of your salespeople or download something, sign up for your newsletter. Like there's so many things you'd want them to do. So the SEO for revenue approach is different because instead of optimizing for rankings, you're optimizing for actual sales or conversions. And it turns out with SEO strategy that when you're optimizing for conversions and sales, not just rankings and traffic, your strategy is different. And that's what I find just super fascinating. So instead of doing keyword research up front, you're looking at search intents to understand, like, what intents am I going to go after before I even start thinking about keywords? The other thing that's different is you're crafting your calls to action and your conversion points. And you're thinking about that all up front. It's not an afterthought like it normally is when you're focused on rankings and traffic. When you're focused on rankings and traffic, you'll generate some traffic. Then you start thinking about how you're going to convert that traffic. And that's the wrong way to do it. If you start thinking up front about what are my offers going to be, what are my conversion point messaging going to be, then that helps you to choose the right content formats and to write your content in such a way to bring people to those conversion points. And you're more likely to get the conversion. So you're basically doing your CRO up front, which is what I think is really important. And then another thing that's been waning in importance for many years that I've been doing SEO is technical SEO. Mm-hmm. So there are very large websites out there that care about things like crawl budget and the semantic or the syntax. The syntactic integrity of your sitemaps and things like that. But then most of us who are building sites that are of normal size and you know, we're going after customers that might be less technical and have teams that are less technical, it just doesn't matter as much. Like what matters to us is that we're writing the right content and we're building our authority with Google so that Google trusts us. And also what matters is that visitors that Google sends us, they engage with our website. So they don't bounce. They find the answers to the questions that they're looking for, and they stay on the site. They don't bounce back to Google, which is something Google would notice. So when you're focused on building the right content and authority and your engagement, then you go down a different path when it comes to SEO. Upfront, instead of, and another thing that I'll harp on for a second is a lot of people who are doing old school SEO, I call it SEO for rankings, they're blogging. And blogging is the only content strategy that they have. So content strategy really boils down to, what are the topics going to be for my blog articles? They're not thinking about content formats that are better at attracting high intent traffic that's more likely to convert. And those are content formats like Q&A or comparison content or buying guides. There's a whole bunch of things that are better than just, you know, blog articles that are targeting keywords. So there's a lot there, but it really does boil down to a different way of crafting SEO strategy.
I love your answer because I was kind of comparing in my mind to user experience and how finding the right content to meet the user's needs. So do you do, in addition to anything with SEO, do you also do anything with like user experience and how that, like finding the right content up front relays back and has the ROI for user experience?
Yeah, I mean, UX matters a lot because at the end of the day, what we care about is, what is Google going to see when it comes to like SEO? And Google's going to see engagement with your website. And that's how Google's going to know whether people it's sending to your website are finding the answers that they're looking for. And if they're finding the answers they're looking for, then Google will send you more. If they're not, then Google will stop sending people to your website, at least on that particular topic for that particular intent. And that's what's really important. And the visual design of your website, the user experience that you're crafting matters a lot for engagement. So we have to make sure that we're putting all of these things together. Like, who are we targeting? What do they want? What do we want them to do on our website when they arrive? And then what type of content are we creating that's going to attract those people? So those are visitors that are high intent. High intent means that they're in the market. They're actively searching for the types of products and services that we have. They're not people who are in the demographic, which is what I would say. So we're not doing, and I'm sorry if this is a tangent, what we're not doing is demographic targeting for search. Because what makes search marketing special is the fact that the visitors have intent. They're looking for the product that I sell. So demographic targeting would be going after, let's say you sell diapers. And you might go after all parents of newborns because they need diapers. The problem with that for search marketing is that they're not in market. Like, they're not searching for the product. So instead, if you were to go after people who go to Google and they're searching for infant Huggies size 2 or something, like that shows that they have intent to buy now. And that traffic is going to convert one or two orders of magnitude more than traffic where you're just going after the demographic. So the demographic targeting is usually the wrong thing. And when we have a keyword strategy, content strategy that is focused on blog articles and what should the topics be, that's when we can fall into this trap of demographic targeting for search, which will generate rankings and traffic. And then once we have that traffic, we're trying to figure out how to convert it, but we've already lost because we were targeting the wrong traffic from the beginning.
I love that. I just recently got into a role where I'm doing a lot of SEO in my role, and hearing you talk about intent completely changed how I thought about all of it. Cause it seems like a simple concept, but hearing someone talk about it and the way you talk about it, I'm like, that makes so much more sense. Like, it makes it way more impactful. When you're using, or you're like searching for how to best use SEO, what kind of AI goes into your practice? I mean, I've seen a lot of articles out there where it's people who are using AI to help with SEO, using ChatGPT or things like it. Do you find that that's helpful, not helpful? Like, what, how do you feel about AI and SEO kind of being a marriage?
Yeah, well, it's definitely helpful, but you have to approach it with the right mindset.
Yeah.
Like there's generative AI and predictive AI. Predictive AI is well, on the generative AI side, like we've all played around with ChatGPT, so we know that it can generate text and answer questions and then also do natural language processing and understand natural language. And just within those capabilities, there's a ton that you can have it do, like understand keywords, choose the right keywords, cluster keywords or topics. That can be very interesting. You could have ChatGPT look at a list of URLs on your website and identify internal linking. Like there's a ton that you can do there. What I think is important on the generative side is that you think of large language models like ChatGPT as tools that can help with problems that require natural language understanding. What you don't want to do is think about them as tools that can like generate blog articles. Like I wouldn't want to use them that way because you're going to be disappointed. They're going to hallucinate. They're going to give you inaccurate information. They're going to write articles that are just basically the average of what's already on the web, which is not going to help you, because an article that is an average of what's already on the web is exactly an article that Google does not need. So instead, we want to think of it as helping you to curate your ideas, summarize your ideas. I have a white paper, the SEO for Revenue white paper, that's 40 pages. And having it extract topics and article outlines from that it can suggest that I write is really helpful. But what I'm not doing is having it give me information and facts. I'm having it process information that I'm pointing it to. Like at the very least, I might point it to three resources on a topic that I trust online and then have it generate topics or outlines based on that or summarize a particular topic that I think might be covered in those resources. But I'm always giving it the resources rather than asking it to make things up.
So you do a lot of, at your current role, you've done both national for the, like within the US and then international campaigns and marketing and SEO. How does AI play a role in that among, different countries? How can you best utilize AI to, if you're doing something in England, but also doing something in the US or something like that?
Or in Spain or something where it's not in English.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely working internationally online, we focus on SEO and content, can be difficult. And I think the trap that marketers fall into is they do translation rather than localization when they're moving into a new market. So you could imagine, I think a great example would be moving from the US to like the UK, because they speak English there. But localization still matters because they're going to use different words for different concepts. They're going to attach different meanings to different words and different concepts. And that's something that we need to understand. We've found that by far the best way to do real localization when you're moving into like a new market is to work with somebody on the ground, a real human who's born and raised in a culture, who can basically understand the ideas, the keywords that you're targeting, the messaging, and understand how it's going to be received. Now, a poor man's way of doing that would be to ask ChatGPT, and it'll give you, it'll recognize, what it'll do is it'll offer you some words and some concepts that it recognizes as being like particularly relevant for whatever location or region that you're going after. And that can be useful, but those are more questions that you need to ask your guy on the ground. rather than trusting that 100%, because I would not trust that 100%. That's much more of an ideation use case where you could ask it that question, see what it gives you, and then maybe it's true, maybe it's not. It's just more interesting things for you to investigate.
That's so smart. I can already think of a few like oopsie doopsies someone could make just by having different words that mean different things.
Yeah, I think of Amazon. So in the US, you put in your cart, when you're shopping, your online cart or any, Macy's, whatever. In the US, anything you're shopping on, you put in your cart. But in the UK, you use a basket. So yeah. There's like a case study of before Amazon, when Amazon started going international, they used cart and they didn't make as much revenue until they changed it to basket. Cause that's, you know,
yeah, it's little things like that, that can really get you. And you just have to get about the business of figuring out what they are in every region you're going after.
What are some lessons you've learned by kind of working on international campaigns?
It's really the translation thing. Like, I think the biggest fail has been, you know, translating content, translating words or message, even like the button text. Like the button text says download PDF, right? And then you hit a translate button, or even asking, because we've been doing this for a long time. And before we had access to software that can do the translation, we were asking humans to do translation rather than working with humans that understand the difference between translation and localization. And we fell flat on our faces asking humans to do it. And then we had Google Translate, and that's its own minefield. Now we have other AI tools, and the AI tools are like vastly better than they were before. But it's really that the pitfall is really, or sorry, the mistake that we've made in the past a long time ago was thinking that we can just do straight up translation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I find that in a lot of things too. Like even when I read books, you can tell when the person has an international character in the book and they didn't talk to that person from that place. It's like very obvious. Can you go a little bit more into your authority first SEO methodology? Reading it on Fire and Sparks website, it's kind of the first time that I've seen and heard about authority first. Can you go a little bit more into detail of what that is and how it differs from what other people are doing?
Yeah, so for authority first SEO, that's really based on the purpose-driven SEO approach, which is, it's all about for any individual brand, you know, looking at your brand and finding a purpose that's aligned with your brand that you can base your SEO on. So one example of that is a brand that we worked with when they were just getting started, Fire Department Coffee. Fire Department Coffee was started by Luke Snyder. Like Luke Snyder at the time was a full-time firefighter. So when I met him, I was talking to him in between shifts and he would do like 12-hour shifts. And so he was a full-time firefighter while he was building this brand. And he got the brand up to $10 million in revenue before he quit. And it's just gone beyond that. So he was able to get to that level, and most of that was coming from organic and SEO, by building a brand that was purpose-driven. And his brand, like what he did from day one, was he gave a percentage of his proceeds to various charities that involve like helping the families of wounded firefighters and wounded firefighters themselves. And because he was building a purpose-driven brand, Fire Department Coffee, he was able to align that brand with a number of influencers and even first responder unions, you know, fire, police, paramedics that cared about the purpose behind the brand. And that is like rocket fuel for your SEO, especially in his case, because what Google sees is that your brand is building momentum. Your brand is building a following, a community around it. And if you think about it, like if you have a community, like more than just some traffic or maybe some backlinks, but you have a real community, then what Google sees is engagement with your website, backlinks, mentions, influencers that are talking about your website, Google seeing clicks on the on the search results page, and those click-throughs are more engagement signals that Google should be ranking your pages higher and your pages better. And then also Google would notice the engagement with your website. People are staying there. They're staying there because they're discovering an awesome brand and they're finding awesome products. And so all of that comes out of community. So the reason why I like that purpose-driven and approach and the authority-first approach is because it wraps up just like a high-level purpose-driven campaign that you can execute, you know, as long as it's aligned. It has to be authentic. So it has to be aligned with your brand. It has to be something that you really do care about. But you can pull that off, and then it generates a number of the other signals that we know Google's looking for. rather than like running a more technical SEO campaign where we're thinking about, okay, how many mentions do we need? How many links do we need? What does our engagement number need to be? It's like, no, just build a following around the brand and let Google notice.
Oh, I love that. That's so refreshing to hear that as important as technical things are, having passion and creativity and creating a community is still just so important. So in the world of AI and tech and all of that, it's nice to know.
So I want to be mindful of our time since I know you have a very busy schedule and we appreciate you making the time to speak with us. I kind of want to dive in a little bit to you do a lot of speaking yourself. You go to a lot of conferences, which is where we connected with you originally. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what insights do you think current marketers should be looking into as they kind of start out their journey, and what do you think more conferences should be highlighting as we move into this AI field?
Yeah, I mean, related to SEO and content, it's really two things. Like, one is that marketing methodologies are going to change. Like, the way we work is going to change because of AI technology. And I think a lot of people are afraid of, you know, is this technology going to replace me? And it's not, because like we need humans to review whatever it is that we're creating with AI and whatever predictions the AI is creating. And then we also need human creativity. But I think the way that we work is going to change. And these are things like real-time content, where especially for SEO content, we can have AI that is pulling out concepts when we talk, when I'm doing an interview like this, or I'm on stage, or I'm doing a sales call, or you're talking to a client, or you're having an internal meeting. We're recording a lot of that now, and we will have AI that is helping us with project management tasks, summarizing meetings, identifying decisions that were made and decisions that weren't made. We call those open loops. But those are going to fundamentally change like how we work. So I would hope that marketers are open to that, because it should be better. It won't feel better in the beginning, because we're going to have to feel our way to like what that actually looks like, such that it is better and it is helping us. And then another thing that I'll say in terms of trends is kind of a misconception among digital marketers of all types that they can hide behind analytics. In the SEO space, we use SEO tools that help us with keyword research, for example, among many other things. For keyword research, like the best keyword research is actually talking to your customers. So you can understand what questions they ask when they're making a buying decision, and their needs, their preferences, their worldview, so that when you're creating content, you can meet them where they're at, rather than preaching to them as if they already know what you know or something like that, which would be a horrible mistake. But digital marketers use a lot of different analytics tools and forget that talking to customers is the best way to do research. When for SEO, we're using a tool like a keyword research tool, it can be helpful to give us a list of keywords, and for those keywords, it'll give us search volume, difficulty, and then we can figure out how relevant each keyword is to what we're doing. But that doesn't answer like the why, or help us understand search behavior around why people are typing in different keywords, or even critically, what the real search intent is behind a keyword. Like, if I type in the keyword shoes, is my intent to find children's shoes or women's high heels or men's loafers or flip-flops? Like, there's real intent issues that a keyword research tool or an analytics tool can't help us figure out. So I think that's a huge misconception and a problem. And I feel like marketers, digital marketers especially, of all kinds, are going to realize that they need to start talking to real customers in order to do their job. And one other thing I'll throw out there for SEO is Google is less of a keyword search engine nowadays, and it's more of a question answering engine. And when you think about it as a question answering engine, how do you know what questions you need to answer? Well, you need to talk to your customers to figure out their needs and the questions that they ask.
Oh, thank you so much. That was great insight. is there any place that people can find you coming up in the new year, whether it's a conference or just social media, or if they want to learn more, chat with you or get involved at Fire and Spark, where can they find you?
Yeah, so fireandspark.com is my SEO agency. So there we do SEO for brands of all types. And then dalebertrand.com is my website for my speaking and workshops and training that I do, all of that. And I'm happy to give my email address. Like, I'm dale@fireandspark.com. So, you know, feel free to shoot me a question about SEO, or, you know, I love talking about that, or the AI stuff, you know, happy to talk about that too.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And if you don't have anything else to add, I think we can wrap up. But thank you. I know you're extremely busy, but we're so honored that you were able to come on and talk with us a little bit more.
Yeah, I feel like I learned a lot about
this. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. It's been fun.